Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for listening. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. Hopefully you are in the car doing a little traveling, but not going to a big gathering, so you can listen to the podcast and catch up on some previous episodes if you missed them. We got Andrew Marchand from the New York Post on. Straight Media News Podcast this week with Marchand. We talk about him breaking that story last week that Jim Nance wants Tony Romo money. We talk about what's going on with the Dan Le Batard show at ESPN, the state of NFL announcing, what's going on with NFL ratings, and we get into a couple of other news items from the sports media world with Andrew. If you missed any previous episodes and want to catch up, we had The Undertaker from WWE on last week, which was really cool. Jim Nance was on a couple of weeks ago. Kirk Herbstreit, a recent guest. Peter Schrager, Ernie Johnson. You can check all those out in the archives. And if you can subscribe to the podcast, that helps tremendously. I would be thankful on this Thanksgiving week. And if you can rate review, that really is great. But just subscribing is what helps the most. All right. I appreciate it. And let's get right now to this week's episode with sports media columnist from the New York Post, Andrew Marchand. All right, joining me now on the SI Media Podcast, regular, first time on the video on YouTube. We're on YouTube now. This is big. We've got Andrew Marchand.
Huge.
Yeah. Andrew Marchand.
No, that's why people want to hear us talk about sports media, because we are on the cutting edge.
Yep. Let me give you the proper intro. Andrew Marchand, sports columnist from the New York Post. And the man last week who sent everyone into a frenzy by breaking the story that Jim Nance wants Tony Romo money. So let's start there. Well, let's start very simply. Is there any chance at all Jim Nance would ever leave CBS?
It seems unthinkable. I think it's a very small chance. I don't foresee that, which obviously hurts his negotiating position. That said, you get into these things. I've seen it a million times in baseball, where if someone else values you at a much higher level, then things change even after 30 plus years in a very nice relationship.
I have to say, I was shocked to read in your article, due to your diligent reporting, that Nance only makes $6.5 million a year or something like that. Which I know now people listening to this are like, oh, you're an asshole. That's a lot of money. Yeah, I got it. But when you compare it to the Buck and Tirico salaries, which you had in there, and you factor in that Nance does the Masters, college basketball, and the NFL, I was surprised the salary was only $6.5 million. What's your take on that?
I think that's a product of when their contracts have come up. So Tirico, it's a little bit murky, but has recently signed a new contract that got him near that $10 million range. And then Buck, I think when they had Thursday Night Football, they redid, I think I might've read a story actually, they redid his contract. So I think that got him in the $10 million range. So yes, you're right. He's making a good amount less right now, but I think it's just a matter of where his contract lined up. And now in theory, Nance should be in that neighborhood, which is still, you know, on the major suburbs outside of where Tony Romo's living, but not a bad salary.
The Tirico one is fascinating to me because, and I don't begrudge the salary, you get whatever you can get. I'm not talking about the salary, but I'm looking at the work, you know, because he's sort of blocked from doing NFL because of Al. And then he's getting that big of a salary to do basically fringe events, you know, horse racing and, you know, whatever.
You're missing one, though.
Six Notre Dame football games or something.
But the Olympics.
All right. I mean, I guess. Yeah.
What do you mean, the Olympics? How much bigger do you want? He's the host of the Olympics.
Yeah, I guess that's...
I mean, but you're right. No, but you're right on the other stuff. He is behind Al on the on Sunday Night Football and, you know, obviously wants to do that, doing Notre Dame. He does a lot of events, though, yeah. But you're right. He doesn't... He's not... They sort of made an investment in that this is our next guy after Costas, after Al, and that hasn't totally come to fruition as of yet.
My prediction on that is I think that whole NBC situation is going to get a little bit dicey because I don't think Al is going to want to leave, and NBC has no case to make about Al should leave because he's still as good as anyone calling the NFL on Sunday nights. Well, so if you push him out, you're pushing him out solely because of two reasons, his age and because you're paying Tirico and you don't want to pay two people.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at it that way. But, I mean, Al does still do a very good job. And he might be able to go on for a long time. I've asked him how long he wants to do it. He says he doesn't know. Right. So he'll be 77 after, I think he's turned 77 when he does the Super Bowl next year in LA in 2000, not next year, it'll be 2022 at that point. So, I mean, you do have to kind of build for the future. He said that he's not going to pull Vince Scully and go as long as he is. He is cutting back a little bit. There are those bye weeks.
Yep. Coming up this week, actually.
Yeah, I got a double bye this week. And so, which I love NBC doing the double bye. I mean, it's a day off. I mean, whatever. It's a week off. But it's a good little semantics game there. But yeah, so but I see your point. You do kind of have to transition, and they are trying to be proactive so you don't get in that Monday Night Football ESPN thing where you're constantly trying to fulfill the spot and you keep failing.
But getting back to Nance for a sec. When is his contract with CBS up?
I believe in June.
June. All right. So they got some time. What do you, if you had to just make a prediction based off of nothing, what do you think he ends up getting from CBS?
Doesn't really serve my purposes reporting out, but I will say 10 and a half, 11, where Buck is.
So that's not really close to the Romo salary then.
It's still ridiculously high, but yes, it's not close to Romo, which is
you compare the amount of work Nance does to what Romo does, just in terms of the amount.
Yes. So here's the thing. So there's two arguments. Here's the thing. Jim Nance has been there for 30 years. He does the NFL. He does basketball. He does golf. So he does all those things. So if you say, well, loyalty wise, he should be the highest paid person on the air at CBS. Then you have, that's one argument. That's generally not how it works in terms of negotiations. It's leverage. Tony Romo, we've talked about it before. I've written about it a million times. Every single domino fell for him. I mean, I could go into everything from the Super Bowls switching this year, where NBC was originally supposed to have it. Now it's CBS's, to Viacom's stock price going down right before the negotiations really were at their head, to Monday Night Football not having a person to put in there. Who was a short thing, and they want him badly because the NFL deals are upcoming. So that worked out perfectly for Romo. They played it very well, and he ended up getting $17.5 million, $180 million over 10-year full value. Nance doesn't really have that leverage, so maybe he can get there, and maybe he wants that. I'm not sure if he gets there fully. The other issue, I think, with CBS is that they have Ian Eagle, who could easily do the NFL, the Super Bowl, and could do the Final Four. Now, golf, Andrew Catalone's good. He's not there at the Eagle Nance level, but they have somebody that CBS did not have, somebody else who could put in. They had Dan Fouts, they were letting go as their number two. They didn't have a number two to just slide up.
They also have Harlan, if you know they wanted to split it
as well,
where so they then, give Ian maybe the lead NFL, and then Harlan could get the Final Four. You flip it. Is there anyone outside of the Jim Nance family who wants him to get the Tony Romo money more than Joe Buck?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's interesting to see when you write this stuff. I mean, I don't try not to go too crazy looking at my mentions, but there are people who support the Nance, you know, getting the money. So outside of Joe Buck, yeah, sure, Joe Buck, that would be good for him. Again, 10.5 is livable. But you know, everyone, it's good. Here's the thing. The business is a very jealous business. And so if you can get past your jealousy and realize you're calling these a major event and you're making multiple millions of dollars, again, maybe I'm different, but it's like, yes, everyone wants more and you want to get the most. And you always should do that in your negotiations, of course, but in the same light, it's like, I don't know. They're making plenty of money. So I don't feel necessary. I thought it was funny that they mentioned it on the air the other day.
Oh, it was phenomenal that Joe did that. That fits Joe Buck's personality though. He, you know, he has a good sense of humor. When I wrote about it, most people in my mentions were saying like, one, it's ridiculous for Nance to ask for that kind of money during a pandemic. Okay, his contract's up in June, whether there's a pandemic or not. So they got to.
Yeah, I don't think that. I mean, again, yeah. It is a little like that's not. This happens to be when his contract comes up, and
right.
That happens to be the market. I mean,
right. Switching gears and speaking of contracts, there's this weird thing that seems to be going on all the time with the Dan Le Batard show on ESPN Radio. The one thing. Before we get into the future and the latest is that, you know, there were massive layoffs at ESPN. They had laid off a producer, Dan hired him back. But why is the overall vibe that ESPN doesn't really care about or respect the Le Batard show? What is that about exactly? Does anyone know?
Well, I think the first thing it's about is that on terrestrial radio, which is the radio stations around the country, it doesn't really work fully because you really have to listen to the show, not religiously, but pretty close to that. Because there's just a lot of intricacies to it. Right. And there's a lot of skill to what they do, but it's not necessarily like a mass market show, which is what ESPN Radio, again, I related Mike and Mike to Applebee's. And that's what ESPN Radio is. It's not necessarily selling in New York. Now, they do have some local shows. You know, get your local restaurants here with Kay and et cetera on ESPN New York and around the country. There are local shows. But, like, it's more of we're trying to serve the masses. And the Le Batard show doesn't really do that. I mean, like, if you listen, like, I listened to when I first wrote this, that they were kind of headed towards a breakup a couple of months ago. You know, the next day, you know, Dan was just saying sports, you know, kept saying like sports because, you know, in the article it mentioned, that they don't necessarily talk about sports as much. If you just turned on the show for the first time, you'd have no idea what is going on. Right. Now, they have a very loyal audience that works probably on a digital or subscriber-based, works better, I should say, on a subscriber-based platform. And, you know, ultimately that's where it will go. I wrote that, you know, months and months ago when I first wrote this story, you know, he's probably destined to end up at Spotify or maybe start his own thing or Sirius XM. That seems like where he's headed up. Now, the one thing is with Le Batard, though, is he's employing a lot of people, and it's easier to do that in somebody else's dime. I mean, you start having to be the one, you know, in charge of all that. That's a lot to have to take care of. And also the idea, you know, he talks a lot about that he negotiates freedom. I mean, to a point. I mean, like, the show doesn't do everything they want to do. They don't talk about everything he's wanted to talk about. You know, if it was just his show, he would be more into the election. It's obvious, you know, he went there a little bit, but not fully. And, you know, the one thing is, like, you know, when they laid off Chris Cote, who was one of the producers, the son of Greg Cote, who's the Miami Herald columnist, who's on the show a lot. I mean, like, this is what happens when you're not in the, you know, you're not, I shouldn't say not a star, you're still a star, but not in the fold as much. They don't ask you what they should do. You know, they just do it. When you're one of, like, Scott Van Pelt, like, I think he's in, Stephen A is in the good fold, that if they had somebody who was close to one of them that they were thinking about laying off, I think they probably would have gotten a heads up and maybe would have been able to save them before it happened. So, yeah, it's obvious where this is going.
Yeah, it just seems to me like there's just some kind of weird disconnect there where you have this show. Like you said, it's not for everyone. You got to really listen regularly to get a lot of the references. But I think it's, you know, it has a big, loyal, vocal following, which is, you know, a very good thing in radio. And, you know, they installed this new morning radio show, which I have not heard one word about from anybody ever. I don't know what the ratings are, but you can't possibly have less buzz or get less attention. So it's kind of I don't get, you know, what the thought process there when it comes to the radio side.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that show is thrown together a little bit. I mean, I think originally they wanted Max Kellerman and Keyshawn Johnson together.
Right, but that's my point about, I don't mean to interrupt, but like Keyshawn Johnson is not like some national figure that America is like clamoring to hear. Like, again, if you have a World Series or NBA Finals. Like, well, why are you listening to Keyshawn Johnson the morning after those games? You know, that's just
like, I'll write about this at some point. Like, I've listened to that show a lot, you know, just to sort of get a feel for it. I'll probably write about it in more detail at some point. But I think one thing that I would say is that Keyshawn on the radio is more of a number two than a number one. So it's kind of built around a number two. And so to your point that it's like when you make the star of the show and he's really a number two, and that's not really an insult to Keyshawn. He's just not, and he actually is more of a radio guy. Like, when you listen and, you know, and he's been doing it for a few years, and you can tell he understands a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And he's pretty good, actually, in my opinion, but he's still a number two. You still need that person to drive the show. He's not necessarily driving the show, and they have Zubin in there. So, yeah, the show is, they kind of want to be bland. I just don't think ESPN values radio enough.
Right.
I think they look too much at like what the revenue sheets say and act as if like that's the only thing that you have to be, you know, chained to, and there's more to it. Like, that's a ESPN radio, regardless if it doesn't make as much money as TV, it's a way a lot of people touch the brand and hear the brand and think about the brand, which is important, especially with it distribution so easy. So there's so much more competition than they've ever had before. So I think they devalue or undervalue radio, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like we're in a time right now with radio where you've got to have like a really dynamic personality, it seems like, to break through, or you do what Le Batard does and create this family almost. You know, you've seen it with McAfee, who's, you know, been able to build, you know, a big following because he's so outlandish. And that ESPN morning show, I don't know who they're trying to, I think you and I may have discussed this before. I guess they're just trying to appeal to, like, you know, 50-year-old Joe Schmo in middle America who is taking his kids to school, and although there's COVID, so I don't know if that's going on, but you know what I mean? Like, and just, you know, giving you the typical radio show.
Well, I think that the thing is most people listen to radio for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of, we're all kind of more home than ever before. So if you have a smart speaker like Alexa, you know, it's a different, how it's, you know, ingested. So radio in your car is something, and hopefully that'll come back when we get back to more normal society again. But it's hard because now there's so many choices. And so, it hasn't necessarily cut through. That's for sure.
Speaking of getting back to normal and everything being upside down this year, the NFL has gotten some strong ratings for this past week. NBC finally got over 20 million for the Chiefs and Raiders Sunday night. CBS had a good week. Fox had a good week. I think, again, I've said this a billion, anytime you talk about ratings for any sport, whether they're up or down, it's not one reason or one factor. There are always multiple factors in play. I do think a big factor, though, here is that the election is over, and I expect the NFL to end up with some strong ratings here to close out the season because the election is over. Do you agree or disagree?
That makes sense. I think if you look at election years historically, that sports TV ratings are down. This year was particularly different because of the pandemic, and it pushed sports into different schedules, which even if, let's say, you had an NBA game, finals game on a Tuesday, that still could affect viewing on a Sunday, in the sense of like normal people only have so many hours that they can invest in watching sports. And that's
in a regular year. You have people whose lives have been turned upside down because of this pandemic. So I do think, well, if you have kids at home or doing homeschooling and all that stuff, you may not be able to get in front of the TV for 4 hours to watch.
100%. So to answer your question, I think this year you kind of have to throw out a little bit.
Yeah.
I think, you know, people wanted to make it into, you know, look, here's the thing. My bottom line on ratings is everyone seems to have like a theory on everything. Why? I mean, if you talk to people who actually, who do this for a living, who study it for a living, they generally speaking can't necessarily point to this is it. They usually say, yeah, it could be this, could be that. And they can't. So I, you know, I understand there are bloggers who are very knowledgeable, who know everything, you know, and talk show hosts, but they could be wrong. I mean, I'm just going to put that out.
I sense sarcasm.
You sense correctly.
I mean, listen, the bloggers know all about the ratings business, and everyone on Twitter knows about, you know, the virus and how it affects your lungs and heart and everything. Everyone, we have experts all over the place.
Well, look, and here's the thing. Some people have some good points. I mean, I'm not going to say like nobody has good points about any of these things. I just know, like, you're a big Yankee fan. Like, when I covered the Yankees, like, everybody on Twitter knew who, like, Joe Girardi should bring in the seventh inning.
Of course.
And, like, Joe Girardi thought about it more, yeah, was smarter than most of the people, and had more information than most of the people. So his results might not have been – and I didn't get along great with Joe Girardi. It's not like I'm the Joe Girardi defender, but you put all those factors in, and I think his decisions probably were better. Even if they didn't work out, were better than the guy on Twitter.
I just wish people, you know, everyone comes at it sort of from their own agenda, but I just wish people who discussed ratings understood that it's not based on one factor and it's based on multiple factors. Yep. I think the election was a huge factor. So I think, and you know, the NFL was lucky. Unlike MLB and NBA and NHL, their schedule was not altered. They're playing when they would always play, you know, the same weeks, same time, same networks. You know, the NBA and MLB were just absolutely thrown upside down. So that's why I think you'll see some good ratings here to close out the season. We mentioned Nance. I might as well bring this up since it's the week for it. I had Nance on a couple of weeks ago, and I told him it's time for the NFL to get rid of the tradition of the Lions on Thanksgiving. And he made a good point about no matter what game you put there, the games are the two Thanksgiving, all the three Thanksgiving games. Now, they're always going to get a huge rating. So you might as well just leave the Lions there. Would you like to see the Lions removed from the early slot on Thanksgiving, or keep it there and throw them a bone?
Yeah, I kind of like the tradition, but look, would you rather have a better game? What do we got Thursday? It's Detroit and who?
The Texans.
Yeah, that's terrible. Yeah. But it's like kind of, I don't know. It's almost a tradition of, you know, you get the hot dogs out and the, you know, pigs in the blanket early, and you got the Lions on. It's sort of, I don't know. There's something comforting about them having a terrible game.
Yeah. What do we know anything about what's going on at Fox with their pregame shows with the COVID? Like, they had to replace their whole cast this week. But there was not really a ton of information out there about it. Is it just like the precaution that we keep hearing about, or?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first time I wrote that story about the college, Big Noon kickoff, and that I didn't write it, but it turned out Urban Meyer had COVID. Right. So, you know, the rules, you know, pretty obvious. They're in a room where they're not, you know, they're not socially distanced very far, and they're not wearing masks. So those people all need to be quarantined. I don't know exactly who had it on the NFL shows, but I think it might've been somebody, you know, with the crew, but same situation where people have to be quarantined. So, you know, I think they're taking the proper precautions from what I understand, but it's, you know, they got hit twice. So
I'll say this,
maybe do more. Yeah.
I saw a little Sunday. Chris Myers is a great host. He's a really, really good host.
Better host than play-by-play guy.
He's really, really good as a host.
Good host. Yeah, definitely.
And the other thing that I thought was interesting. So Greg Olson was supposed to go to Fox next year to be their number two NFL analyst, work with Kevin Burkhardt. He got injured this week and said he's not going out like this. Sounds like he's going to play again next year. So I wonder if Fox, do they stick with Darryl Johnston on that number two team, or that's an interesting one there. If that throws a whole sort of wrench into the Fox plans for their number two NFL team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's two things. Number one, he only played this year because he got such a big contract from Seattle. So that was number one. Now, I didn't see that quote. I also heard, though, originally that maybe he'd be able to come back this year. Mm-hmm. Is that, I don't know if you saw anything different.
I don't know. I just know he said he didn't want his career to end this way. So.
Gotcha. Oh, that's understandable. So, well, to answer your question, let's just say he does not start when his contract is just, it begins when he stops playing. So he has the right to keep playing. Yeah, they might just go Moose Johnston again, keep it simple. You know, the only guy, and there's been kind of mixed reviews in terms of what people thought of Jonathan Vilma. I think more people like him than not, but it hasn't been like home run, like he should be in the number two booth next year. But he's definitely kind of on the way up. So I could see that maybe, you know, if maybe they put Vilma in there. But beyond that, I don't think there's somebody who necessarily is going to be put in there.
I didn't hear any of it because I can't sit there on a Sunday and watch Washington and Detroit. Did you hear any of Aqib Talib?
I did.
He got a lot of attention on Twitter. What was your summation?
Yeah, so it was Red Zone. You know, that's what I watch prominently. So I'm going in and out. But look, I thought he was good. I think with a really good play-by-play guy, and maybe I'm not a big three-man booth person, but he might be good with three-man. But he needs to be led into the right places. Like late in the game, he was talking too much about like defensive back play when you really need to be talking about the game situation. But he was different. He was raw. And the thing that he did have that you could build on is he's very natural. He wasn't trying to be something. And I think that's something that, like, again, I've mentioned this before about Romo. I think that's kind of like the ingredient that he has. He's just very natural. He's not contrived. He's not trying to be something else. And I think that would really separates him. It's a very relaxed broadcast that he has. And so I think Talib had that, which is a real good quality.
Yeah, I want to hear him next time he calls a game, because I just think with the NFL, it's just, you know, McAfee had that rant about everyone sucks,
yeah,
and, you know, without naming names, which I thought was weak. I think you got to name names in that. So if you're calling out everybody.
Yep.
But I will say it's so, you know, clearly to me, CBS and Fox, they don't want to rock the boat or upset the apple cart or whatever terrible analogy you want to use. They want like these cookie cutter guys, which makes no sense because the guy who's the best, Romo, is unique because of his personality. You'd think they'd go get more guys like a Talib instead of giving you the retreads. I don't know if they're just trying to keep the NFL happy by not, you know, like, I don't think McAfee would, I could see Fox maybe hiring him. I don't, like, ESPN and CBS would never hire McAfee to call games. It's just not a fit for those networks.
Well, but there's a fine line. There's a fine line, though, because, like, yeah, Romo worked. Like, nobody really knew before. And everyone's, and CBS deserves full credit. But nobody knew for sure that Romo was going to be a superstar. I mean, everyone knows now, of course. And they knew that first game, you know, people were on it quick. I know you were with your quick tweet.
But you got to give them credit. But they made him the lead analyst.
Yeah. No, they did. They had a problem with Sims and, you know, they identified Tony and, you know, Sean McMahon as David Burson, and they went after him hard and made that happen. And so, yeah, you give them full marks because they took that chance and it worked. That said, like, for these other, but the opposite, though, it doesn't work. Right. And then you have 16 games of people just being annoyed,
right,
and they rather not annoy people. And I think at the essence of a broadcast, as negative as this might sound, is like the broadcast crew, you don't want them to annoy you. We all have people who, right, we listen to, and when they, right, annoy you the whole game. And so when you take a chance, two things, you have a more potential to have someone who just interferes with the game. And number two, it's not that easy to find. There aren't that many people who sound good who are different,
yeah,
you know? And like, so that's, and that's why I don't think they develop. But see, that's where, to me, like, your 6-7 team, if I was running it, my 6-7 team, you get 2 years. If you're not moving up, or, you know, maybe you're blocked, or we don't really think you're moving up, then we're going to move on to the next person. And that's where you're developing. And I really feel like you kind of could develop your stars. And if you look at like ESPN's crew on Monday night, I mean, I think, again, this would have taken some really good planning on the executive level. But if you end up with Lewis Riddick joining Steve Levy and Brian Griese, why not spend the previous college season having the three of them work together? Mm-hmm. Now, I get it. They wanted Romo, and they didn't know who they would go if they didn't get Romo. I mean, they had a million plans. But in terms of internally, you need to figure that out a year in advance. This is where we're going to go internally, and then let them work together. And then you have something. Now instead you have a Monday night crew that's, you know, trying to do it on the run.
I thought the Monday night crew had their best game last night. I thought Levy was really good on the Bucks Rams game. My issue with the Monday night crew is it's not about that. It just have two people in the booth. I don't understand why there needs to be three, but
that's, yeah, I think there's too much talking.
Yeah.
Too much talking, not enough. You don't have to analyze every play. And then when you have three people, that ends up happening.
I'm going to give you a weird one here before we wrap up. So Jeopardy announced today that they're going to continue production November 30th. They're going to rotate some guest hosts starting with Ken Jennings. Is there a sports media man or woman who you think could be good in that role and get that? Well, forget getting the job because the sports person most likely won't. But is there someone you'd like to see get a crack at it? Because that is one of the top jobs in all of television.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who probably could do that job.
But do it well.
I've watched it. I'm not a huge Jeopardy guy. I just think there's a lot. I mean, Van Pelt, we talked about Nance, Ian Eagle, who else? Costas, but he's probably a little bit older, not going to do it. I think there's a lot of people. Dan Patrick is a guy who could do it. I don't know. There's a bunch of people I think who could host a show like that and do it well and kind of have some cool comments, rejoinders. Kevin Burkhart would be good.
He'd be good, yeah, for sure.
Van Pelt would be good. Yeah, Van Pelt would be good.
I hope they, if they're going to go with the guest host route for a little while, I hope they put some sports people in there. We got Thanksgiving this week. Give me something in sports media you're most thankful for. Not covering Mike Francesa anymore. I thought it might be coming out of your mouth with that question.
Most thankful for. Sports media. I don't know. I mean, this is a boring answer, but the ability to make a living doing this.
That's a terrible, terrible, terrible answer.
Bad answer. Not a good answer.
I'm talking about an announcer, a show, a trend, a Twitter account.
I'm thinking.
A video, something.
What am I thinking? I'm thankful for when decisions like the Boogermobile are made, okay, that makes my job easier. But that's old news. I'm thankful for that. It's a tough one.
But you're supposed to reflect this week. You're supposed to reflect. Think about.
I haven't reflected Tuesday.
It's been such a shitty year. You got to try to think of something positive that has happened.
I did. I gave you something positive. You said he was born.
Who's that?
I gave you something positive. You said it was boring.
Oh, that you're thankful to have a job. Yeah, of course. That's not
all right,
exciting.
I know, not excited. You didn't say you had said what something exciting that you're thankful for. I didn't know I'm always having.
Are you thankful for the Chris Russo show, Mad Dog Unleashed on Sirius?
Yeah, I'm thankful for Mad Dog when he says funny things.
Yeah.
That you tweet out or that's hilarious.
We'll get to COVID. Yes. Like he's having doctors on to talk about COVID.
For people who didn't see this, is that the day before he did this whole rant about how he's gonna, when the vaccine was, first the 95% news came out, he said he would take the vaccine. And he has a thing, he's been saying this forever about his fanny. They can just shoot it up right in my fanny. For whatever reason, he says that. I don't know why, but he does.
Yes.
Then Boomer and Geo did a good impersonation of the whole thing. Then later that day, he's doing his opening. I'm listening. He's saying we're going to talk about the whatever Thursday night football. We're going to talk about this, that, and there. We'll do some COVID.
Yeah, it's like a sport at this point.
We'll do a little COVID 405 after whoever Green on.
I wrote something this week, last week. Doug what was Fauci? It? It was the anniversary of the Cal Stanford play with the band on the field, and I said, everyone plays that game about I wish Twitter was around four. Yeah. And that play would be one of those things. I play the game. I wish Mike and the Mad Dog were around. Like, I wish Mike and the Mad Dog together discussing COVID would just be the most insane, error-filled, hilarious sports radio that's ever taken place.
Yeah, the beauty of it when they would talk about these other things is they talked about them like they were sports.
Right.
Like, when we went into Afghanistan after 9/11, I mean, I remember vividly Francesa saying they have, they're gonna have home field advantage. I mean, now it's 20 years later.
Yeah,
you have a lot. I mean, it's just you can't make that up. We're gonna have home field advantage. I think that's the key. Yeah. So them talking about COVID would be because also the other thing is, You did this the other day. You tweeted, what you said? Oh, you tweeted about ESPN Plus getting the Sunday ticket. I got no information. I've heard Chris say it a number of times in his career. Like, I don't know anything about this subject, yada, 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 and then give a huge opinion.
Right, right.
Yeah. I know nothing about this. Here's my huge opinion about it that I'm blasting out to all my listeners.
He's the best.
All right. He's very entertaining. I'm glad
we got to do a little Mike and the Mad Dog for 2 minutes here at the end. It's Thanksgiving. Give the New Yorkers a little something there to his show. His show is as good as ever, Russo. It's so crazy.
He's good. He's very good at his job.
Here's the thing. It all goes by what you want from sports talk radio. I don't agree with probably at least half of the things he says, but I want one thing: entertain me.
Of course.
And he entertains.
And also, it's just how he talks, too.
Yes.
Like, you know, the malaprops.
He couldn't say Rob Gronkowski the other day. He tried like three times and then just said the tight end. He gave up. It was great. All right. Well, I thank you for coming on. Have a healthy and happy Thanksgiving.
How long do we go? I don't have a timer on this.
35 minutes.
And you said what? You said 30. You've never hit the mark once.
Well, I didn't expect to do the Mike and the Mad Dog at the end.
You really? Have you listened to our shows ever?
Well, I was trying to keep it tight. But have a healthy and happy Thanksgiving. Keep it to under 10 people. I don't want Cuomo to arrest you. I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon here on the SI Media podcast. Thank you, Andrew.
All right, thanks, man.
All right, take care. All right, my thanks to Andrew for coming on the podcast during this busy week. If you missed any previous episodes of the SI Media podcast, you can check them out in the archives. We had The Undertaker on from WWE last week, which was cool. Jim Nance, recent guests, as well as Peter Schrager, Ernie Johnson, Kirk Herbstreit, all in the archives. So you can subscribe and listen to those. And I appreciate you listening on this busy Thanksgiving week. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media podcast. Take care.